So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. She was a healthcare advisor to former Senator Hillary Clinton. She worked in the Obama White House. Then she was chief of staff for the Department of Health and Human Services, then senior counselor for the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And in January, Andrea Palm came to be the Wisconsin Secretary of the Department of Health Services. Welcome to Wisconsin Eye, Secretary. Welcome
Thank
to Wisconsin.
You. Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
You had a long history in Washington. Mm-hmm. Why did you accept Mr. Eber's invitation?
Mm-hmm. So a couple of reasons. One, I have spent quite a bit of time in government. I fundamentally believe that government has a critical role to play in the success and health and well-being of the people that we serve. And, you know, while you can't solve all problems through government, it needs to work, it needs to be delivering. And so an opportunity to help run a department like the Wisconsin Department of Health Services was just a really tremendous opportunity for me, and one in which I could bring my experience from 8 years in the Obama administration at HHS to Wisconsin. I also was really attracted to the state by Governor Evers, Governor-elect Evers at the mm-hmm. time, his leadership style, the way he talked about bipartisanship, the way he talked about the people of this state and a desire to serve them, to hear them, to make policy based on what was good for them and what they articulated as their needs. And so when I had an opportunity to talk with him directly and talk specifically about this role, it really just was an opportunity I couldn't pass up. I also think, having spent time at the federal level, the ability to come to a state where you're closer to the ground, closer mm-hmm. to the accountability of the people that you're serving, that's a really important reminder about the things that you do in policymaking and programmatic efforts really, really matters. And so how you do that, how easy it is, how much red tape there is, how you think about designing things to meet the needs of the public, you're just much more accountable when you're at a state and local level. And so for me, an opportunity to sort of refresh myself and be more accountable to the people of this state was also very attractive to me.
Biggest, not surprises, but biggest lessons learned about Wisconsin in your 3 months working at the mm-hmm. state level, ma'am?
A couple of things. One, I had underestimated what winter was. I think, you know, I grew up in upstate New York, in the Adirondacks, close to the Canadian border. I thought I had, you know, a real good grasp of that. But I guess that was a while ago, and so I'd lost some of my thick blood. So that was a little bit of a surprise for me. I think on the but otherwise, one thing that was very comforting to me was how familiar it felt to you know the place that I grew up, mm-hmm. rural, very community focused. Pitch in together and solve local problems. So that has been very reassuring to me in terms of that familiarity. Lots of lakes, lots of, you know, green space. The state is a beautiful place, and that feels very familiar to me. I think on the surprise front, and maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but I have found the conversation around healthcare, around whether or not to expand the Medicaid program, to be at a place where a lot of the rest of the country, and at least where the federal government is now, was in like 2010, and we're still having that conversation that I thought we had a while ago, and so I've had to sort of pull out my old recollections, my old knowledge about the worth of the Medicaid program, the importance of its role in health insurance and how it relates to the other parts of the system, because many in this state are still need to be convinced or still need to have the facts refreshed for them in a way that brings us to a place where we can have a 2019 conversation about ensuring people in this state and giving them access to affordable, high-quality coverage.
Well, Wisconsin, not one of the 37 states that has expanded Medicaid expansion.
Yeah.
It's the central element of DHS budget. Mm-hmm. And the Republicans say, though, that one of the reforms, the updates that they enacted, Governor Walker, over the last 8 years, cover everybody's below the federal poverty level. Mm-hmm. But the Governor Evers wants to expand it to 82,000 additional, and the Fiscal Bureau summary, page 167, the 82,000 would be an additional 82,000 who would get coverage mm-hmm. under Medicaid, mm-hmm. 52,000 parents, and 30,000 childless adults.
Yep.
Do these 82,000, what type of insurance, who's covering them now?
Mm-hmm. So under the analysis, we expect about half of them are currently enrolled in the marketplace, the Affordable Care Act marketplace, mm-hmm. and that the other half are currently uninsured. And, you know, our assessment of that is that that is about affordability. You really need to remember who these folks are. They are between 100 and 138% of poverty. That's $12,000 a year. That's $1,000 a month.
Yeah,
and up
joint
to
finance,
about,
you said we're talking about people that are earning $7.50, $8, $9
yep.
an hour.
Yep.
Excuse me for interrupting.
No, not at all. Yeah, that's exactly right. When you think about $7.50 an hour, $8.50 an hour, $9 an hour, the idea that you rent and groceries and gas and what it costs to purchase insurance versus the affordability that you get with a Medicaid plan, it's just hard to make ends meet. And so when people are choosing between the bills they're going to pay, mm-hmm. I think what you're seeing in those 40,000 who are uninsured right now is that they can't afford to make the choice to buy health insurance versus to pay their other bills. And so so our expansion gets at those affordability issues in ways that will further reduce our uninsured rate, but also, you know, draw down this new federal money for other investments in the system.
And you score that and an additional $1.6 billion over
yes.
the two-year biennial budget, Secretary?
Yes. Correct.
So if we expand, we cover 82,000 people, and you say half are enrolled in ACA and half are uninsured.
Mm-hmm.
And we then, because our federal reimbursement rate is what, 59%?
Yep.
We would then draw down an additional $1.6 billion mm-hmm. in new federal mm-hmm. dollars. Mm-hmm. And you told the Joint Finance Committee on April 3rd, the governor's budget would then reinvest it in hospitals, an upper of $367 million.
Correct.
Dental care, $48
million. Yep.
Physicians and psychiatrists, $67 million. Mm-hmm. Why, well, the Republicans ask, why do we need to expand it since we're already covering everybody mm-hmm. under federal poverty mm-hmm. level? Mm-hmm. But answer the Republicans' mm-hmm. question.
Mm-hmm. So I think there are a couple of things here that really answer the mark on this question. I think, first, one of the things people need to understand is that when the previous administration went to 100% of poverty for childless adults, they covered about 150,000 people. That's a really important. It was a really important thing for them to do,
yeah.
and it was super helpful, obviously, to those folks who needed access to coverage. But because they didn't go all the way to the federal threshold
yes.
of 138%,
138.
Exactly, they only got the. They got the regular match. They only got the 59%. And so by going all the way to 138, we can turn those 150,000 who are already insured under the previous administration's expansion
yes.
plus the new 80,000 at a 90% match. That is how we save the state of Wisconsin $324.5 million.
Yes.
Because we maximize our ability to draw down the 90%. So we think not only is it important to save the state and its taxpayers $324.5 million, but it allows us, as you mentioned, to reinvest that money and then draw down even more federal dollars to the tune of a total of $1.6 billion for these other investments. And I think, you know, whether it was my courtesy visits with senators while leading up to my hearing for confirmation, whether it was the governor and lieutenant governor's listening sessions between Election Day and inauguration, or other work that we've done, you know, I've been traveling the state really trying to learn Wisconsin. You hear these themes all across the state. Access to dental care is limited. The cracks in the behavioral health system, the need to build on the progress we've made on the opioid epidemic, the need to think about long-term care as a continuum that needs to be strong, not just today, but for the future as this state gets older and we all get older. Mm-hmm. And so what does that need to look like? And so the ability to save the state $324 million, pull down new federal dollars, and really invest in healthcare, not just for those 82,000, but for the state as a whole, is just a really important opportunity for us right now, and one that we should take advantage of, one that we should execute on with this new governor.
The debate, as I've followed it over 8 years, it's been so interesting how it's evolved. Because you hear different criticisms. The federal government is $17 trillion in debt, and you cannot trust the federal government to continue to pay 90% if we expand. And then you have the ACA, which has been trimmed back. The individual mandate is gone. Other provisions are gone. And now a federal judge in Texas has ruled it unconstitutional, and now there's an appeal pending before a court of appeals in New Orleans. So Are you certain that the expansion dollars are going to remain for the foreseeable future?
Mm-hmm. You know, I really do think that this argument is kind of a boogeyman. Okay. I mean, the Affordable Care Act is not just over 9 years old now, and the predictions of its demise and its ruin of the healthcare system have been vastly overstated, right? I mean, it is a successful program that has ensured millions of people with access to affordable coverage. The Medicaid expansion is obviously a piece of that. But two times previously, the Supreme Court has ruled it to be constitutional. And so the
5-4 votes, thanks to Chief Justice Roberts, excuse me.
Yeah, no, but constitutional. And so I think this idea that it's somehow going away, or that the feds are going to decide not to pay 90% when you've got 37 states who now have a 90% match baked into their budgets, right? State budgets are heavily reliant on their federal Medicaid money, have always been and are more so now. So the idea that you are going to, and the program insures 75 million Americans, more than Medicare, second only to the employer-sponsored market. And so this idea that Congress is going to pick a fight with 37 governors and 75 million Americans, to me, it seems like the best excuse they've got at this point. And I just don't see it as credible in a world where it is now so fundamental to the way we ensure Americans with affordable and high quality insurance.
I find it very interesting. When the governor ran, he laid out three priorities: healthcare, mm-hmm. transportation, and K-12 funding. Mm-hmm. There seems to be some potential grounds of compromise on K-12 funding and transportation. But Republican leaders repeatedly have said, excuse me, I'm going to use an old political term, read our lips, we're not going to expand Medicaid. Why do you think they are so reluctant to consider the governor's proposal, mm-hmm. Secretary? Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what's important about this budget. It is the first time you've had a governor who wants to expand coverage, and so it is really the first time that this legislature and the people of this state have seen on a piece of paper in black and white the dollars and cents of expansion. Mm-hmm. And so I think there was, whether it was my joint finance hearing or other, or members' interest in different kinds of models, or the general conversation around how you might do this, there seems to be some of that happening as well. I think that is a recognition that when you see in black and white what you can pull down from the federal government to improve the healthcare system, when we all are hearing the same things about places where the edges are starting to fray and you need some shoring up of things, there's a recognition that we need that federal money to make those investments, and that expansion is how you do that. And so this is a different conversation, and it is why we are so committed to having it both with the legislature but with the people of this state, who continue to be clear, whether it's the most recent Marquette poll or their
70%.
Yes. Yes, up from 62%. In a quarter, in 3 months, not something to dismiss, that increase. But they're also showing up at joint finance hearings around the state. People are saying we should take that federal money. And I think when they see in black and white what we can buy, the investments we can make in the healthcare system more broadly, it makes this conversation totally different.
When I read some newsletters, though, from Republican legislators, they say that this would widen Wisconsin's welfare system, further expand our welfare system. Mm-hmm. Your reaction?
Mm-hmm. Again, I think that is this idea that we're still having a 2010 conversation. Medicaid insures 75 million Americans.
1.1 million in Wisconsin.
Yes.
Almost one in five.
Yep. And so the idea that this is somehow welfare, I think, is a moralistic judgment about who is enrolled in the program. And I think, again, what we know about the way our healthcare system has grown up is Medicaid, second only to employer-sponsored insurance, and then Medicare, which is 45 million Americans. And so it is a critical component of the system as a whole. And we need, because of the Affordable Care Act, we get this 90% match, and we should take advantage of that in a way that allows Wisconsin to move forward.
Are there regional issues in this expansion debate? The reason I ask is the 82,000, would they largely be in our largest cities or just obviously scattered throughout Wisconsin, but would most of them be in our larger cities?
So our assessment is that a third of those who would be newly covered are outside of our major population centers.
One third.
Yep.
So two thirds then in our metro areas.
Mm-hmm. Which makes sense because, right, that's where most of your people live. So that's where you're going to get your greatest numbers.
I was curious, at your April 3rd hearing with Joint Finance, Senator Darling asked you to take a look at the Arkansas expansion. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with it. I've got a 5-page summary that I'm not going to say I understand. But you said you do your homework on Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Is that a potential expansion route here for Wisconsin? Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the things that that we need to be cited on as it relates to the differences, and again, I think the thing we need to be focused on in Wisconsin is what works for Wisconsin, how we maximize the benefits to Wisconsin. And, Wisconsin has a really strong and proud tradition of innovation in healthcare that, again, we've got an opportunity to build on. But one of the components of that is a highly managed care model in Wisconsin. And one of the ways that other states who've looked at the private option, the Arkansas-like model, are far less or not at all doing managed care as well or to the extent that we are here in Wisconsin. And that's where they get some of the benefits of this private option. And so we stand to gain much less because of how robustly we utilize managed care in the state of Wisconsin. I think the other thing that people need to remember is because Medicaid has requirements about a benefit package, anything that is not offered in that private option, the state has to wrap around with those services. And so you add costs to the system in that regard as well. And so there are a couple of ways in which for Wisconsin, this could turn out to be more expensive than I think people think it might be. New Hampshire is another state that did an Arkansas-like model, a private option model, and they have gone back to traditional Medicaid because of cost concerns. And so I think, everybody needs to be looking at these, and we need to be talking about them, but our assessment was do it expeditiously. We've left federal money on the table too long. Do it clean so that you can again, move quickly and maximize your federal draw. And that is how we came to the model that we proposed.
Just a quick follow-up question on the Arkansas model. The summary that I'm looking at says the Arkansas waiver was approved, but Arkansas adds a work and community engagement requirement as a condition of eligibility. Do you think to qualify for Medicaid, there should be a work or job training part of that component?
So I think if when you look at the Medicaid program and you look at the court ruling that invalidated that work requirement, they talk a lot about the core mission of the Medicaid program, which is to provide health insurance. And I think it sort of gets back to this question of, is it welfare and therefore should we require work? Like, that's the logical conclusion of that assumption. And what we know about Medicaid is that it actually is a work support. When you think about the people between 100 and 138% of poverty, they're living, you know, paycheck to paycheck. And if you're going to lose your Medicaid, if you hit 105% of poverty, you're not going to take that extra shift as a personal care worker or a direct care worker. You're going to stay under. So in many ways, lack of expansion is a work disincentive. And the thing we could be doing to help people climb the economic ladder, take that promotion, take that extra shift, is go to 138% of poverty so they don't lose their health care. But in Wisconsin, we are focused on the mission of Medicaid, which is to provide access to affordable, high-quality health coverage.
You told Joint Finance that the Medicaid expansion is interwoven in the DHS budget. Mm-hmm. Senator Rippenbach asked you, what if Medicaid is not expanded? Mm-hmm. As recently as Monday, you said, I don't want to talk about a plan B, mm-hmm. but because we haven't had a full airing of Plan A. Mm-hmm. But so here's my question, though. If there's no Medicaid expansion, don't we have to come up with an additional $354 million in GPR state tax dollars just as a cost to continue, mm-hmm. providing for our current 1.1 million caseload?
Mm-hmm. $354 is not a familiar number to me. Status quo would require some additional funds, you know, increased health costs, inflation. Yes. You know, I don't know what that exact number is, but there would be additional GPR needed to be status quo. But I think, right, our point in putting this down in black and white on a piece of paper was to show what you could invest in if you draw down the federal money, and that is the conversation we're having.
Yeah, the Medicaid expansion is so important, we spent a lot of time on it, but let's wrap it up this way. Mm-hmm. The Medicaid expansion is the only way that hospitals and dentists and physicians and psychiatrists and care for young mothers a year after they give mm-hmm. birth. Mm-hmm. So this is the only way those additional services get paid for?
Correct.
Okay. And if it's not approved, we don't provide this additional level of care.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. We now have 1.1 million residents in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. As this state gets older, what are your projections mm-hmm. for 5-10 years mm-hmm. out? Mm-hmm. And so is it sustainable? Because the increased cost of Medicaid has been called not sustainable. Mm-hmm.
So we did look at this about a year ago. Again, we think it's really important to not just be thinking about the system today, but what it needs to look like in the future. And that's why some of these investments in long-term care and other parts of the system are critical to make sure it's coming. We all know it's coming. We can't pretend we're surprised. And so how are we getting prepared for that? And so what we found was that while the population is continuing to age and there will be more of those folks on Medicaid, mm-hmm. it is not at the rate of the population as a whole. So Medicaid is not taking on or is not projected to take on as many as are actually getting older. Like, the ratio is, and I would suspect that's about the role that Medicare and Social Security play in the health insurance of seniors, but also in the economic security of seniors, so that they are not in a place where they fall below the poverty level and are eligible for Medicaid in the same way that folks of working age are. And so, again, it's an important thing to be focused on, but our current estimates are that it will not be at the rate of the general population.
Last question on Medicaid expansion, I promise.
Sure.
If the
Republicans, it's all I talk about, so.
I know, it's such a critical debate. Yeah. If the Republicans put a budget for the next 2 years on Governor Evers' desk that does not expand Medicaid. Mm-hmm. Would you ask him to veto that budget? Mm-hmm.
So obviously our budget is anchored in the Medicaid expansion. It's critical for these investments. It is a top priority of this, as you meant, you know, transportation, public education, healthcare. Those are the things the people of the state told us they wanted us to do.
Right.
And so I think obviously we got to look at the budget as a whole. You got to, and you know, I think it's too soon for me to say what I would recommend to him in this regard, but it is a top priority for us, and it is what we are focused on and what we are traveling the state to help make sure people understand.
Okay, new subjects, I promise.
All right.
The epidemic of measles, mm-hmm. when I look at the charts on CNN and all the others, mm-hmm. Does not show any rash of cases in Wisconsin.
Correct.
Are you concerned that a measles epidemic could happen here, Secretary?
Yeah, so I, you know, any place there is a pocket of low vaccination, low vaccination rate.
What's our vaccination rate?
So for our 2-year-olds, it's 89% statewide, but obviously there are places, there are pockets where it's higher, there are pockets where it's lower. And the thing that's really so important about measles is it is unbelievably infectious. 9 out of 10 people who are not vaccinated or otherwise immune to measles will come down with it if they are exposed. That is really infectious. And so we need to be focused on increasing our vaccination rates across the state, but particularly in communities or counties or, you know, wherever those pockets are that it is not high enough. And we consider high enough to be around 95% because of the protective function of that that community. You prevent the spread when you've got about 95% of the folks vaccinated. We call that herd immunity, and it makes sense visually when you think about that. You wrap yourself around folks who might be more susceptible because they haven't been vaccinated, but that community vaccination of 95% helps protect that community from an outbreak. And that is what we should be driving
towards. Do we need any change in state laws or rules to mm-hmm. get our percentage of 2-year-olds that are vaccinated from 89 to 95%?
Mm-hmm. So we are, as a department, focused on the things we need to do with our county partners. Obviously, local county public health is on the front lines of these issues, and we are working very closely with them to think about and work on individual places where we should be driving those rates up with educational materials, with clinics, with other ways that people can choose to get vaccinated. We want to make sure people have information, they understand the facts. But it is not our recommendation at this point that there needs to be law changes to help us do that.
Okay, a new issue. How concerned are you about the groundwater contamination in Southwest Wisconsin mm-hmm. and Kewaunee? Mm-hmm. It involves DNR, Ag, your department. Mm-hmm. Do you consider this a health crisis for Wisconsin? Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as the public health agency for the state of Wisconsin, we have a critical role to play in the safety of our groundwater. It is obviously very important, right? Everything that we put in our bodies that we're exposed to are potentially impactful to our health. And so we think about potentially the short-term consequences, things like nitrates and bacteria can make you sick, but not from more than a short period of time. Mm-hmm. Things like lead and arsenic, particularly when you think about our more susceptible populations like kids, that can have not only impacts on birth outcomes, but longer term health consequences for children who are exposed. And then we continue to learn about emerging contaminants like PFAS, which is, I think, yes. the issue that you are referring to in the particular
compound,
locations. Yeah. And so our role is the development of groundwater standards. And we have a toxicologist at DHS who is currently, at the request of DNR, looking at 27 particular contaminants. And it's a very scientifically rigorous process where we look at all of the current scientific literature. We make sure we understand how recent findings interact with, build on, conflict with older findings in the literature so that we can make a really sound recommendation that is scientifically valid and protective enough to DNR so that they can feel confident when they do their rulemaking process that the standards they put out, the regulatory requirements that they make, okay, are scientifically sound. And so we are working on those 27 now. We expect to turn those over to DNR by mid-year, and are, you know, are obviously very committed to being good partners with them and with others to make sure that our groundwater is safe for the people of Wisconsin.
Next to last question. You have not yet been confirmed.
Yep.
Senate Majority Leader has said that members of his caucus have concerns about some cabinet appointees. Mm-hmm. I've seen a news release from some Republican senators objecting to one of your deputies being a former executive with Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. Do you believe you'll be confirmed?
Mm-hmm. I don't have any reason to worry about my confirmation. I worked hard when I first got here to learn the state of Wisconsin, to bring to members of the Senate in my courtesy meetings information about my experience. The fact that I have worked in a federal agency, I think, is uniquely qualifying to help run a state agency. And, you know, we've been working with a number of members on both sides of the aisle on various projects and things that they are interested in, whether it's groundwater, whether it's creative ideas in and innovations in healthcare systems. People have a variety of interests based on their own districts, and we, as an agency, are very interested in working with members across the aisle. And so I feel good about it. Obviously, I have tremendous respect for the advice and consent. As somebody who spent 20 years in D.C., yeah,
yes.
I'm very familiar with it. But I think that I have made the case to this body that I have the kind of experience and knowledge that uniquely suits me to run this department.
And then last question. On December, you've been in Washington for 20 years. Mm-hmm. On December 8th, the Redskins come to Lambeau Field to play the Packers. Who are you going to root for?
Oh, I'm rooting for the Packers. I could never root for the Redskins.
Oh, well, let's end on that note. Secretary of the Department of Health Services, Andrea Palm, thank you
so much.
Thank
you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.